ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण, हैप्पी गीता जयंती। एंड दिस ऑस्पिशियस डे वी आर इन द मिडिल ऑफ द भक्ति योगा सेक्शन ऑफ भगवद गीता। सो टुडे वील डिस्कस व्हाट माधव गोपाल प्रभु लेफ्ट इन हिज सिलेबस। सो He's supposed to complete 8 chapter, but I think he did 4 verses or 5 verses. So now we'll start from 5th verse. Antakale cha mameva smaran muktva kalevaram yah prayati samadbhavam yati nastyatra samshayah. So Arjuna asked these several questions, 8 questions in the beginning of this chapter, and Krishna is answering them. Krishna answered 7 questions, but the 8th question is about Prayana Kala, the journey from this world. Okay, so that's the main subject of this chapter. So how does one know you at the time of death, Prayana Kala? So Krishna discusses how to remember him at the time of death. So antakale cha mam eva smaran muktva kalevaram. At the time of leaving the body, if one can remember Krishna, then one will attain Krishna. Okay, of this there is no doubt. Okay, yah prayati samadbhavam, one can attain my nature. So now this is about remembering Krishna at the time of death. But after this, Krishna says the disposition at the time of death determines the destination after death. So this is the law of last thought. So that he gives in the 6th shloka. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajatyante kalevaram तम तमेवैति कौन्तेय सदा तद्भाव भावितः। सो वन हू रिमेंबर्स कृष्ण एट द टाइम ऑफ डेथ विल अटेन कृष्ण, बट यम यम वापि स्मरण भावम, वॉट एवर वन रिमेंबर्स एट द टाइम ऑफ डेथ वाइल लीविंग द बॉडी, वन विल अटेन दैट। सो प्रभुपाद गिव्स द एग्जाम्पल ऑफ भरत महाराज इन द परपोर्ट। सो भरत रिमेंबर्ड ए डियर एट द टाइम ऑफ डेथ, ही अटेन्ड डियर। And we know in the fight between Indra and Vritrasur, so Vritrasur fought with so much of his strength, and in the fight his one hand was cut, then he still fight, continued to fight. Second hand was cut, he was continuing to fight. How? With mouth. So he said, I don't have two hands to fight, I have a mouth, I will swallow Indra. He swallowed Indra and he thought fight is over. And he went into remembering the Supreme Lord, Krishna. So Indra came out of the abdomen of Vritrasur and he was cutting the throat of Vritrasur for about an year. But still, because Vritrasur was so absorbed in remembering Krishna, he did not even realize that Indra was cutting his throat. So definitely he attains Krishna because he remembered Krishna at the time of death. So when the remembrance of Krishna at the time of death takes one into deep absorption in Krishna, the person even doesn't realize the pain of death. Another example in the same episode is Dadhichi. So Dadhichi is very powerful by his austerities and devotional service, and the Supreme Lord Vishnu himself said, you please Indra and all the devatas, you please go to Dadhichi and ask for his bones and manufacture a thunderbolt. Then all the devatas went to Dadhichi and asked, we have one service, we need your bones. Then Dadhichi initially said no, but then finally he said yes. Just to test them, he said no. Then the devatas were taking out his bones. Dadhichi did not even realize the pain, physical pain of being separated from his body. So, because he was so absorbed in remembering Krishna, he did not realize even the pain of death. So, why did this happen to these devotees? Because they lived a life of remembrance of Krishna. They lived a whole life of Krishna consciousness. Being Krishna conscious at the time of death is so natural for a devotee. And in such natural absorption in Krishna, one doesn't even realize the physical pain of death. And one doesn't even understand the emotional pain. So, and the pain is not only on a physical level, it's also an emotional level. What is that emotional pain that a person could experience at the time of death? The pain of unfulfilled desires. The pain of hurt by some loved ones. Okay, oftentimes an average conditioned soul not only experiences the bite of whatever 40,000 scorpions at the time of death, or whatever number of thousand scorpions at the time of death physically, but also mentally there is a lot of anxiety and agony. All the bitter experiences could overwhelm him, or unfulfilled desires could overwhelm him. I am dying without completing the construction of my house. I am dying without seeing the marriage of my granddaughter. I am dying without getting one stick from my great granddaughter. So one grandfather had this desire. Okay, my desire is to get one stick purchased from your son, from your grandson's son. Okay, so like that, unfulfilled desires overwhelm a person. Emotional pain is there, and the pain of misunderstanding, and the pain of guilt sometimes. So, in the case of Vritrasur and Dadhichi, who planned their death? The Supreme Lord Vishnu. Vishnu gave a plan, master plan, to kill Dadhichi and to kill Vritrasur. So, Dadhichi, definitely, he might be having that, generally we might think that Dadhichi, how did he take it? When Vishnu had sent the devatas, you take the bones of Dadhichi. What does it mean? Vishnu is giving a plan to kill Dadhichi, to end the life of Dadhichi. I have given my life to him and he is ending my life. And he is sending the devatas to kill me. So sometimes when your own beloved person apparently causes some harm to you, you won't be able to take it. Even Vritrasura also. Vritrasura has understood that the Supreme Lord Krishna has told these devatas to manufacture a thunderbolt with the bones of Dadhichi to kill me. My lord is making a plan to kill me. So they did not become emotional. They did not get overwhelmed with that emotional pain that is apparently caused by Vishnu. Because they understand that Krishna is my well-wisher. Whether it is life or death, it is sanctioned by him and it is my responsibility to accept it. And in fact, that in that situation also a devotee perceives love of the Lord. Whether it is happiness or distress, success or failure, victory or defeat, death or life, a devotee is one who perceives Krishna's hand in all circumstances, even at the time of death. And that doesn't happen overnight. So if one lives a life of Krishna consciousness, then one can be conscious of Krishna while ending the life. So we see this vivid example in the case of Prabhupada also. So Prabhupada lived a life of Krishna consciousness and he brought so many people into Krishna consciousness, and even at the time of leaving the body, leaving this world, on the deathbed also, he was translating Srimad Bhagavatam. Nautama shloka vartanam jushatam tat kathamritam. स्यात् संभ्रमोन्तकालेपि स्मरतां तत्पदाम्बुजं न उत्तम श्लोकवार्तानां जुषतां तत्कथामृतम्. सो वन हू हैज डेडिकेटेड वन्स लाइफ टू प्रोपगेट द टॉपिक्स ऑफ कृष्णा, टू सर्व कृष्णा, that person will not run into any misconceptions or bewilderments or confusions even at the time of death. Syat sambharamo antakalepi. Antakala is a very critical moment, the time of death. Antakale api, even if it is such a painful situation of antakala, death also, syat sambhramo, there is no sambhrama, there is no confusion or bewilderment in the mind of a devotee. Smaratam tatpadambhujam, with a clear consciousness, such a devotee will be able to remember Krishna. And Prabhupada is the best example. So even on the deathbed also, he was giving purports that can be read by thousands of people for thousands of years to come. Right? Clear consciousness. So, how can Lord do this to me? How can I die before the marriage of my grandson? How can I die before fulfilling this desire? So people get emotional also. Physical pain, emotional pain. But for a devotee, both pains are not there. There is only pleasure of experiencing the love of Krishna even at the time of death. So for us to come to this level of consciousness, our Krishna says in the next sloka, what is the key of remembering me at the time of death? Okay, so for ordinary people, death is leaving home and leaving relatives. But for a devotee, death is going home, going back to Godhead, in the company of real relatives, Krishna and all the associates of Krishna in the spiritual world, gopas, gopis, cows, whoever, or Vishnu Parshadas, whoever. So it's not leaving home, it is leaving for home, or it is going home, back to Godhead. So that's what Krishna says. He says, yaha prayati samadbhavam, yati nasti atra samshayaha. When Krishna says something, there's no doubt about it. But when Krishna says and he adds, na samshayaha, we should not doubt at all. Right? So, you said it, there's no doubt, we don't doubt it. But you are also saying, there is no doubt about it, na samshayaha, we should trust even more. So then amsamshaya word he repeats again in the next sloka also. That is 7th sloka. He says, tasmat sarveshu kaleshu mamanu smarayudhyacham mayyarpitamano buddher mame vaishyasi asamshayaham. So tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, you should always remember Krishna at all times. Mam anusmara, remember me, yudhyacha, and do your fight. Fight. Means Krishna is not instructing us to ignore our responsibilities. Krishna is advising us to remember him while fulfilling those responsibilities. Okay. So it's not that one just ignores one's responsibilities to remember Krishna or serve Krishna. So while fulfilling all one's duties, one can worship Krishna. That's what Suniti also said to Dhruva. She said, tameva vatsashraya bhritya vatsalam mumukshu bhirmrugya padabja paddhatim ananya bhave nija dharma bhavite manasya vasthapya bhajasva purusham. So you take shelter of Krishna, you serve Krishna ananya bhave, without any deviation in your consciousness, but nija dharma bhavite, do your other activities also. Fulfill your responsibilities as a human being in certain situation. Just do that. For Arjuna, it is yudhyacha. Yudha is his duty. But someone else, something else is his duty. So fulfill all the duties, but don't ignore Krishna while fulfilling the duties. And in the name of serving Krishna, remembering Krishna, don't ignore your responsibilities also. Set example for common people. So Krishna is saying, do both. So think of Krishna. If there is a practice of thinking about Krishna during one's lifetime, and there is a possibility of remembering Krishna at the end of one's life also. That's what Krishna is revealing. In the Isha Upanishad, there is one verse where a devotee offers a prayer. My dear Lord, please remember all the services that I have done to you, so that I can come to you. I don't remember the Sanskrit. Kritam smara, kritam. 3 times he says that. So he says, you remember me, you remember my services. But Prabhupada says in the purport, devotee need not pray like this. Okay, devotee, whatever services done by the devotee, Krishna automatically remembers, right? Even without devotee's prayer. But out of humility, devotee may sometimes request the Lord, please remember services that I have done to you, and then show some mercy. something similar in the third chapter, fifth canto. There are these priests of Nabhi. They also offer prayers in prose to the Lord. They conduct a sacrifice so that Nabhi can get a son who is as good as the Lord. Then the Lord comes. The Lord comes there, and then they say, "Oh, we have called you in this sacrifice, which is a materially motivated sacrifice. This foolish Nabhi wanted a son like you," and they said all these things, and they offer prayers. "May we remember you at the time of death." Okay. And Prabhupada, I think he quotes in one of these purports, he quotes, "Krishna Tvadiya Padapankaja Panjaramti," our Kulashekaralvar's Mukundamala Stotra prayer. So he quotes that, and the devotee, when he is in proper consciousness of remembering Krishna, devotee feels like, "Okay, let me leave this body. This is the right consciousness. Let me just go back to Krishna. I may get deviated again." Okay. And in that shloka, in Kulashekar Alvar's Mukundamala Stotra, these two verses are quoted in that purport. You see, they are confirming each other. So, this Asmat Sarvesh, Antakalecha Mameva, Yamyam Vapi, these verses are referred to in that purport. So, one who remembers Krishna at the time of death will go to Krishna. So, for that, the key is, one should practice that remembrance. One should practice hearing and chanting throughout one's life. So, there may be hundreds of obstacles. People may just look at us in this way. Why, what has happened to him? He has gone crazy. Why is he dedicating his life to Krishna? But let people comment. "But I will continue to remember Krishna." That's the conviction of a devotee. This shloka is there. Chittam naiva nivartate kshanamapi Sri Krishna padambujan nindantu priya bandhava gurujana grahanantu munchantu vam durvadam parighoshayantu manuja vamshe kalankostuva tadrik prema dharanu raga madhuna muttayamanantu me. Chittam naiva nivartate kshanamapi Sri Krishna padambujan. Let my mind not deviate from the remembrance of Krishna even for a moment. Remembering Krishna's lotus feet. Sri Krishna padambujan. Nindantu priya bandhava. Let my own relatives criticize me. Ninda is criticism. Let them criticize me. Prahlad is a perfect example of this shloka. So Prahlad was criticized by his own teachers, his own family members, his own father and friends. Oh, he is remembering Krishna. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu, he is always remembering Krishna, ignoring his responsibilities as a demon to hate Krishna. So, nindantu priya bandhava gurujanaha. Elders also may criticize sometimes. When a younger person takes to Krishna consciousness, elders may criticize. Nindantu priya bandhava gurujana grihnantu munchantuva. Let them accept me, let them reject me, I don't mind. Durvadam parighoshayantu manuja vamshe kalankostuva. Durvadam, let people spread gossip. Durvada means gossip. Let people gossip about me that he has gone crazy. You know, Hiranyakashipu's son, the king of demons, had a son who is a worshipper of devotee, worshipper of Krishna, worshipper of Hari. So there is gossip in Hiranyakashipu's kingdom probably. They are all thinking about, gossiping about Prahlad's nature. Okay, so durvadam parighoshayantu. Parighosha means propagation. Let people propagate, send broadcast messages that I have become a devotee, I don't mind. Durvadam parighoshayantu manuja vamshe kalankostuva. So this Prahlad, by becoming a devotee of Hari, he is bringing a kalanka to our demoniac vamsha. Who said that? His own teacher said that. Chanda and Amarka, they said that you are not a bona fide member of demoniac dynasty. And in fact, you are born to destroy the demoniac dynasty. This is Vamsha Kalanka. You are like the handle of that axe that can destroy the sandalwood forest of all the demons. Right? And axe is Vishnu. Durvadam parighoshayantu manuja vamshe kalankostuva tadrik premadharanu raga madhuna mattaya manantume. Mattaya, because I have become intoxicated by experiencing the love of Krishna, I don't mind all this criticism, ninda, gossip, this and that. I am fixed up in my own remembrance of Krishna. Prema dhara anuraga madhuna. I am experiencing the nectar of love of Krishna. While serving Krishna, a devotee, sincere devotee, who is serving Krishna without any motivations or interruptions, experiences the affection of Krishna. Right? When the practice of bhakti is spaced out, one may not get that nourishment in Krishna's service. When the practice is regular and unmotivated, one experiences divine intervention in the happenings of one's life, one experiences love and affection of Krishna. So even in sadhaka stage, to some degree at least one can acknowledge this. By careful introspection, honest contemplation, we can see how much Krishna is affectionate to us. Right? My little efforts, my humble efforts are being reciprocated by Krishna. Right? If Krishna's affection is not there, why would I be in the midst of the association of devotees? Right? The very fact that I am able to chant Hare Krishna and reading scriptures and eating prasadam every day shows that Krishna is affectionate to me. And when someone is experiencing that affection of Krishna, durvadam will not affect him. Ninda will not affect him. Durvadam parighoshayantu manuja. Let them do it. I don't mind. Right? So this is the essence. So thinking of Krishna at all times doesn't happen overnight at the time of death. At the time of death, one cannot think of Krishna. But if one has a practice or experience of remembering Krishna throughout one's life, one will be able to do so effortlessly. Right? Krishna will force his remembrance upon a devotee at the time of death. One need not even worry, will I be able to remember Krishna? Just focus on serving Krishna throughout the lifetime. Then at the time of death, Krishna will force his remembrance upon you. Don't worry about that. It's his job. It's his responsibility. It is his headache. He says, yoga kshemam vahami aham. The word vahami indicates that Krishna is carrying the burden of the responsibility of his devotees. Arjuna Acharya was uncomfortable hearing this vahami word. But Krishna says, I am happily carrying the burden. I will carry the burden of the responsibility of my devotees on my shoulders. Right? So, that is... And Prabhupada quotes this Hare Krishna Mahamantra 3-4 times in these 2-3 purports. Right? So that's the way of trying to remember Krishna. If there is no experience of hearing and chanting, remembrance is not possible. In fact, the essence of all the scriptural rules and regulations and other devotional practices that we do is only to come to the stage of remembering Krishna. Smartavya satatam Vishnor vismartavyo na jatuchit. Okay? And there is another shloka in that same book. And the shloka is, if you don't remember Krishna, whatever you do is waste. Amnaya bhyasananyaranya ruditam vedavratanyanvaham medascedafalani purta vidhayaha sarvam hutam bhasmani tirthanamavagahanani chagajasnanam vinayatpada Dvandvam bhoruha samsritim vijayate devasanarayana amnaya abhyasanani aranya ruditam. Amnaya means scriptures. Abhyasana, your Vedic study of scriptures, is aranya ruditam if you don't remember Krishna. What is aranya rodana? That is crying in wilderness. When somebody just loses his way and enters a forest, and which tiger will come from which direction and attack him, he doesn't know. Which ghost will catch him, he doesn't know. What other calamities might come, he may not know. He's crying in pain. So our scriptural study is like crying in a forest if you don't remember Krishna. Amnaya abhyasananyaranya ruditam. Second, vedavratanyanvaham medascedafalani. All the vedavratas. All the different vratas, vows that we take up based on the Vedas are like exercises for reducing bodily fat. Medas cheda falani. That's the result of following the vows. Purta vidhayaha sarvam hutam bhasmani. Purta vidhayaha and other Vedic regulations are like oblations into ashes. Third point. Then fourth, Tirthanam avagahanani chagaja snanam vinayat pada. Tirthanam, going to pilgrimage sites, going for yatras, without remembering Krishna, is like elephant bath. Okay? So, yat pada. So, remembering the lotus feet of Krishna is the essence of all these things, right? Yat pada dvandvam bhoruha samsmritim vijayate devasanarayana. So dvandva, those two lotus feet of Krishna are the most worthy objects, worthiest objects of remembrance. If that remembrance is not there, then whatever else we do is not of much use. That's why Krishna says, mam anusmara tasmat sarveshu kaleshu. Always remember me, yudhyacha, and do your responsibilities. Also fight. So that's what gopis are doing all the while. Eighth shloka. Abhyasa yoga yuktenam chetasananya gaminam paramam purusham divyam yati parthanu chintayan. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa ananya gamina. For that we need to do abhyasa. So remembrance of Krishna doesn't happen so fast. We should do abhyasa, means practice. Practice to meditate on Krishna. That practice also involves in engaging one's senses in Krishna's service so that mind can come into the process of remembering the Lord. So mind control, sense control, and focus on Krishna. Which happens first? Yeah, both should happen. But first and easiest and most practical and effective way to bring the mind under control is to first control and restrict the senses. The senses may be restricted from sense objects, the mind may meditate on it. Continue to engage the senses in Krishna's service, mind will slowly come into picture, into remembering Krishna. That's what Krishna says, that lust is there in mind, senses, but first begin with restricting the senses from sense objects. Then work on the mind. If you directly target with the mind, it may be little difficult, quite difficult. That's why Krishna says in the 12th chapter also. In the 12th chapter, Krishna says, Mayyeva mana adhatsva mayi buddhim niveshaya. Mayyeva mana adhatsva means you engage your mind in me. Always remember me. That's the highest way of doing bhakti. That is called smaranatmika bhakti, according to Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. If you can't do that, come to the next level. Mayi buddhim niveshaya. Engage your intelligence in my service. That is mananatmika bhakti. If you can't do that, come to the next level. Engage your senses in my service. That is abhyasa rupa bhakti. So that is easier. So Prabhupada has given us all three. So first do engage your mind in Krishna service by chanting a couple of hours in the morning. Then engage your intelligence by studying Gita, Bhagavatam, hearing Bhagavatam classes. Then throughout the day render service also. So all three are given to us. Because if you directly attempt to smaranatmika bhakti, mayyeva mana adhatsva, highest, like the gopis do, yadohane vahanane mathanopalepa prinkankhanar bharudhitokshana marjanado, one cannot directly jump to that stage. It begins with engaging senses in Krishna's service. Eventually, gradually, by Krishna's grace, mind also will get into remembering Krishna. Right? At least mind will not have distracted thoughts when there is constant absorption in service, even on an external plane, physical plane. Right? So we should practice that. Practice remembrance. Abhyasa yoga yuktena chetasa ananya gamina. Let the chetasa, let the consciousness not get deviated. Paramam purusham divyam yati partha anuchintayan. Oh partha, start remembering me. Practice to remembering me. So next, then you can attain Krishna. So this is about remembering Krishna at the time of death. Now, ninth shloka, Krishna describes what are the different ways of remembering him. Kavim Purana Manusha Sitaram Anoraniyam Samanusmaredyaham Sarvasya Dhatara Machintya Rupam Aditya Varnam Tamasah Parastat. Kavim means Krishna is the omniscient person. He knows everything. He knows the past, present and future. Kavim. And Krishna is Puranam. He is the primeval Lord. Oldest person who never becomes old. Okay. He is beginningless. Oldest. Puranam. Third. Anushasitaram. Anushasan. He is the controller. He instructs people and then controls people. That is Anushasitaram. Fourth. Anor Aniyamsam. He is the smaller than the smallest. He enters even an atom also. Krishna is not only there as Paramatma in the hearts of all living beings, Krishna is there in every single atom also. Even a material object has that property because of Krishna's presence in it. Right? Anor Aniyamsham. Next, Anusmarijaha, you should remember him. Then fifth point is Sarvasya Dhataram. Sarvasya Dhata, he is the maintainer of everything and everyone. Achintya Rupam, he has inconceivable form. Achintya is inconceivable. Rupam is, he has a form. He has a beautiful form. He is not impersonal. He is personal. He has a personal form, Rupam. Then, eighth, Aditya Varanam, he is luminous like the sun. He is self-revealing. Next, Tamasaha Parastat, and he is, Tamasaha is this dark material existence. Parastat means he is beyond that. Tamasaha Parastat. I think in the sixth canto, some sixth or eighth canto, one of them, Gajendra episode or some other place, the Lord is described as Paratah Parat, right? So Tamasaha Para, only one Para is there, their Para square is there. What is Tamasaha Para? What is beyond the darkness of this material world? There is the effulgence of Brahman. And what is beyond the effulgence of Brahman? Krishna, person, Bhagavan. He is Parataha Parat. Not only Para, he is Parat Para. So he is Tamasaha Parastat. So, and this Tamasaha Parastat need not refer to Brahman here. Only one Para is there, two Paras are not there. So it can refer to Bhagavan. So because Bhagavan is also Tamasaha Parastat, Brahman is also Tamasaha Parastat, but depends on what you understand. Then 10th shloka, Krishna describes the Shat Chakra Yoga, one who fixes his life air prana between the eyebrows, Ajna Chakra, and by the strength of yoga with an undeviating mind, in full devotion, bhaktya, he will attain me. So this Yoga Mishra, this is called Yoga Mishra Bhakti, this couple of shlokas here, they are a part of Yoga Mishra Bhakti, in which Prabhupada doesn't explain the different rules and regulations of this Yoga Mishra Bhakti, but he just brings it. It's all not practical for you. Forget it. Just chant Hare Krishna. Remember me. Remember Krishna. And he requirements of Shat Chakra Yoga also he gives in the 11th shloka. He says, Vitaraga. Then Brahmacharya. Vitaraga means not having attachments. And Brahmacharya, celibacy. Then Veda Vidaha, knowledge of Vedas. And uttering Om. So these are some requirements of performing this Yoga Mishra Bhakti or Shat Chakra Yoga. And the result is one can enter Brahman. Then what is the process of Shat Chakra Yoga? Close the doors of all senses. 12th shloka, the Lord says. Close the doors of all senses means, this is Pratyahara. Withdraw the senses from sense objects. Ahara means food. Not only food for the mouth, food for eyes is also Ahara. Food for ears is also Ahara. Basically sense objects are described as ahara sometimes, right? So when you say prati ahara, you try to restrict the senses from going to sense objects, right? Basically sense control. So close the doors of senses, withdraw the senses from sense objects, and fix the mind, and fix the prana on top of head, and take shelter of me completely. This is Yoga Dharanam. Okay, I also don't know much about this Shat Chakra Yoga. So 13th shloka, by doing this, the destination is that one can attain spiritual planets. So with that, Krishna describes this Yoga Mishra Bhakti or Shat Chakra Yoga. Then he, with great ecstasy, he gets into the next section. 8.14 is one very, very important shloka. Ananya Cheta Satatam Yomam Smarati Nityashah Tasyaham Sulabhah Partham Nitya Yuktasya Yoginaham. Ananya Chetaha Satatam. Without any deviation in the mind, Chetaha Ananya. So Anya means something else. Ananya means nothing else. Ananya Chetaha. Your mind should not have anything else except Krishna. And Satatam, always. Okay. Mind will not have anything except Krishna for 1 minute. No, always. Satatam. And Yomam Smarate Nityasaha. In this way, one who remembers me always. Tasyaham sulabha partha. For such a person, I am very easy to attain. Nitya yuktasya yoginaha. Because he is nitya yukta, always engaged in this yoga. This is bhakti yoga. Okay. So here the keyword is sulabha. Krishna doesn't use the word sulabha in Shat Chakra Yoga, or Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga. He uses sulabha in bhakti yoga. It's very easy. And Prabhupada further says that even a small child also can perform. Dhruva Maharaj did bhakti. Suniti did not recommend other yogas to Dhruva. Prabhupada says that Suniti told Dhruva to perform Bhakti Yoga, because Bhakti Yoga is that process which even a child also can perform. Other yoga is very difficult. Okay, so the purport says, gives a distinction between Bhakti and other paths. So the practitioners of Karma Yoga and Hatha Yoga, Jnana Yoga, so without Bhakti they cannot attain their own goals. So Bhakti doesn't depend on anything else. Okay, so pure Bhakti Yoga is done in selflessness and desires nothing except Krishna's service. That's why he is called Nishkama. Basically Prabhupada is paraphrasing that shloka, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama Atayeva Shanta. So because a Bhakta is Nishkama, Bhakti Yoga is Sulabha. Okay, when there is Kama, it's not Sulabha. Okay, whenever there is a selfish desire, any process becomes very complicated. Okay, why do we get into complications mentally or in relationship wise? Because there is Kama, expectations. When there is expectation, generally it leads to frustration. Okay, when there is no expectation, one can be grateful for whatever one receives. Bhakti Yoga is selfless, Bhakti Yogi is selfless, and he doesn't have undue material expectations from Krishna. So thus, whatever affection that he receives from Krishna, he is grateful for it. But karma path, jnana path, yoga path, they aspire for heavenly enjoyment or ashtasiddhis by doing ashtangas and liberation, whatever. So because there are expectations, if the expectations are not fulfilled, there is frustration. But Bhakti Yoga is performed with a selfless intent. That's why Prabhupada says, because Bhakti Yoga is Nishkama, there is no Kama, so there is no, it's Sulabha. So such pure devotees do not run into rebirth. That is 15th shloka. Mamupetya punarjanma dukhalayama shashvatam napnuvanti mahatmanah samsiddhim paramam gatah. So mam upetya punarjanma, after attaining me, devotees attain, because in the previous shloka Krishna said tasyaham sulabha partha, it's very easy for devotees to attain me, sulabha. After attaining me, they don't have to take birth again in this world, which is characterized by dukkha and ashashvata. Dukkha, there is distress in this world, and even though there is some happiness here and there, it is ashashvatam. The happiness will not last for a long time. So this temporary world, which is full of miseries, need not be an abode or a place of residence for a devotee who attains Krishna. Na apnuvanti mahatmanaha samsiddhir samsiddhim paramam gataha. So such great souls never return to this world having attained the highest goal of personal service to me. Paramam gataha. Here Acharya explained that paramam gataha, that supreme destination, is an opportunity to render service to Krishna. So for a conditioned soul who is wandering in the material existence, serving maya and trying to serve one's own senses, there is no satisfaction. Because the more the senses are given satisfaction, the more they demand for more and more enjoyment, right? So this service that we render to someone doesn't satisfy that someone, doesn't satisfy us also. Okay, that's the nature of maya. When a person works so hard for the satisfaction of one's own senses and the senses of other people, because senses have a tendency to demand more and more, and mind, material mind, constantly instigates the senses to ask for more and more, the servant of the senses will not be satisfied at any point. But a servant of the senses of Krishna is satisfied, because Krishna is Atmarama, he is self-satisfied. His satisfaction doesn't depend on our satisfying him. Okay, and devotee is also self-satisfied, because he is satisfied in serving the self-satisfied Krishna, he is also satisfied. So basically, devotee is satisfied in serving Krishna, and Krishna is already satisfied in relationship with the devotee, because both are deriving satisfaction from each other in a selfless mood. Okay, Seeing this devotee satisfied, Krishna is satisfied. Seeing Krishna satisfied, devotees are satisfied. They desire, they are already self-satisfied, and they desire each other's satisfaction with selfless intent. So there is absolutely no scope for dissatisfaction there, right? So devotees, they don't have any other desires. They are akama, so they are satisfied. So they, that's the highest goal. Okay, yatma suprasidati, suprasidati, the complete satisfaction of the heart happens when we do in a selfless, when we do the service in a selfless manner. When the service is ahaituki, then suprasidati is guaranteed. When the service is haituki, with an expectation, then this prasidati doesn't happen, the satisfaction doesn't come. So satisfaction is in selflessness, not in selfishness. On the spiritual path, we will be satisfied to the degree we are selfless. Okay, selfless person is satisfied because devotee serves Krishna without any selfish intentions. Devotee serves Vaishnavas without any selfish intentions. There is satisfaction guaranteed, right? So samsiddhim paramam gataha. So having said that, there is no rebirth for such devotees, selfless devotees having entered the eternal spiritual world. Now Krishna will give a contrast. So while the devotee attains the eternal world where there is no rebirth, other people in this material world, whichever destination they may attain, there is rebirth. Abrahma bhavana lokam punaravartin arjunam mamupetya tu kaunteya punarjanmana vidyate. In two lines, Krishna says that there is rebirth in the material world. Abrahma bhavana loka punaravartin arjuna. Everyone in this material world, even up to Brahmaloka, will have to take repeated birth and death, even if they are pious. Pious people will not transcend birth and death, will get a better birth. Better birth, janma is there. Yesterday we were discussing 13th chapter, janma mrityu jara vyadhi dukkha doshanu darshanam. So taking birth is dukkha. Understand that whether you take birth in a multi-millionaire's family or a poor beggar's family, it is birth and it is dukkha. So here, abrahma bhavana loka punaravartin arjuna, one has to take repeated births and one has to repeatedly die, even if one goes up to upper planet, highest planet of Brahmaloka also. From lower planet to upper planets, there is always repeated birth and death within the material universe. But mamupetya tu kaunteya punarjanma na vidyati. One who reaches me need not take birth again in this material world. So, the rebirth of everyone who is under the control of karma is stated in the first two lines. And the next two lines Krishna elaborated on no rebirth for one who takes shelter of Krishna. Now Krishna gives a contrast between the material world and spiritual world in the next few verses. 17th shloka. Krishna says about kalpa. So, I don't have the book. Someone has Bhagavad Gita? No, you may want to see. Okay. 17th. Sahasra yoga paryantam ahar yad brahmano viduhum ratrim yoga sahasrantam teho ratra vidojanaha. So, in the 17th shloka, Krishna describes about Brahma's one day. Sahasrayuga paryantam, there is within one day of Brahma, there are 100 divya yugas, 100 yuga cycles according to human calculation, and same is the night of Brahma. Okay, so I think we will not take these calculations. Purport gives so many calculations, all of us know, many of us know at least. If you don't know, we can refer again. It's an overview class, right? So 19th shloka. Okay, I'll not recite the all the shlokas. So now within one day of Brahma there are 1000 divya yugas. Like that, Brahma's 1 month is 30 days, 1 year is 360 days, and he lives for 100 years. And that 100 years of Brahma is one exhalation, one breathing period of Mahavishnu. He exhales and then he inhales. Within that exhaling duration, this entire lifetime of Brahma is there. So when he exhales, the universe are manifest. When he inhales, the universe go unmanifest. Right? So this manifestation and unmanifestation, or creation and destruction, exist only for the material universe, not for the spiritual universe. Okay. At the beginning of Brahma's day, all the living beings are created. At the end of Brahma's day, the living entities go into unmanifested. Some are qualified to go out of the material world, they will go back to Godhead, are liberated. But other people will have to take birth again. There is bhutva bhutva praliyate. So, it is repeatedly created and repeatedly destroyed. So, that's the nature of this material world. So, that Krishna describes in 18th and 19th slokas. But in 20th sloka and 21st sloka, Krishna describes about the spiritual world which is eternal. So, 20, we will recite 20. Parastasmastu bhavonyom avyakto vyaktat sanatanaham yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nashyatsu sa na vinashyati. So beyond this creation and destruction or manifestation or unmanifestation of the material universe, there is another universe which is never subjected to creation or destruction, which is never subjected to manifestation or unmanifestations. Parastasmastu bhavonyo, and that is the eternal abode of Krishna, that is Sanatana, supreme, indestructible and transcendental to this matter. Okay. So even when the material world is annihilated, that spiritual world remains as it is. Okay. So 21st shloka. Avyaktokshara ityuktaham tamahuhu panditam tamahuhu paramam gatim yam prapyana nivartante tadhama paramam mama avyakto akshara ityuktaha. It is said that spiritual world is avyakta, unmanifest to the material eyes, and akshara, it is infallible. Tamahuhu paramam gatim, that is the supreme destination of all beings, and it is never subjected to destruction. Yam prapya, one who attains that, na nivartante, one need not come back to this world. Tad dhama paramam mama, that is my supreme eternal abode. Okay. So these are the qualities of the spiritual world. So how to attain that supreme abode of Krishna? Krishna is giving the characteristics of material realm and then spiritual realm. And he is also giving us the way to reach from this material world to this spiritual world. Right. So purushaha sapara. Saparah parthaam bhaktya labhyastvananyayam yasyantahasthani bhutani yena sarvamidam tatam. Purushah saparah partha bhaktyatu bhaktya labhyastu ananyaya. So Krishna uses the word ananya several times in this Bhagavad Gita. Ananya bhakti. Ananya chetaha satatam yomam smarati nityasaha. And here bhaktya labhyastu ananyaya. Ananya chetaha satatam ananyaschintayantomam yejanaha paryupasati. And nityasaha. Ananya chetaha satatam. So like that Krishna uses the word ananya several times. Means don't deviate your mind to something else. When you are on the path of bhakti yoga, just be fixed up in Krishna. Don't allow the mind to go in 100 different directions. So purusha saparah partha bhaktya labhyastu ananyaya. If one is performing that undeviated devotion, then one can attain Krishna. Purushaha paraha, the para purusha, the supreme personality of Godhead Krishna, is available and accessible to a devotee who performs devotional service with determination and without any deviation. Okay. Then yasyantahasthani bhutani yena sarvamidam tatam. Everything is situated in him. Yasya antahasthani bhutani. This will be elaborated in the next chapter, in the 9th chapter, 4th and 5th slokas. Antahasthani. Everything is within him and he is within everything. All that we will see. So, yena sarvamidam tatam. He is all pervading. Although he is present in his abode. He is there also and he is everywhere also. For example, Krishna was protecting Parikshit Maharaj within the womb of Mother Uttara. So, Krishna was standing within the chariot in front of the Pandavas and Kunti and Uttara. And Krishna also entered simultaneously within the womb of Uttara. He's inside her womb also. He's inside also, he's outside also. Okay. And Brahma is offering prayers to the Lord after Brahma Vimohana Leela. Brahma is standing in front of Krishna and offering prayers. My dear Lord, I am your child. You are like my mother. I am in your womb. Please protect me. I have done an offense. When a child kicks the mother from within the womb, will the mother take an offense? No. So, recently, in the 8th chapter only, you have shown the entire universe within your belly to mother. I am there also within the universe. Brahma is standing in front of Krishna and saying this. I am there inside your womb. So Brahma is outside Krishna. Brahma is inside Krishna. So Krishna is there inside the universe. Krishna is there outside the universe. Okay. So this is inconceivable. Actually, it's conceivable if we understand that Krishna has inconceivable potencies. Okay. So in the capacity of being Karanodaka Sai Vishnu, Krishna is outside all the universes. One expansion. Purushavatara. All universes are emanating from him. So Krishna is outside the universes. And in the form of Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu, he is inside every universe. Okay. Who is this Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu? Krishna only. Who is this Karanodaka Sai Vishnu? Krishna only. So Krishna is there outside the universe, Krishna is there inside the universe also. If you understand that Krishna has multiple forms, multiple energies, multiple incarnations, so there's not much confusion here. Okay. So it's inconceivable. So because his amshas are everywhere. He's all pervading. Yena sarvam idam tatam. He is all pervading, although he's present in his abode. He's there also. Goloka yeva nivasatya khilatma bhuto. Govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. Although he's there in Goloka, eternally doing his pastimes, he's there in the material universe also, within the hearts of all living beings. So, in the last few shlokas, Krishna describes the supremacy of Bhakti Yoga in attaining Krishna. So, 23rd shloka, he says that there are different times at which a person may die. Some times are considered auspicious, some times are considered inauspicious, right? So, if one leaves the body at an auspicious moment, in Uttarayana and all that, then one may go on the path of light. Acharya say that it is the path of jnanis and yogis. And they end up in liberation, Brahma Jyoti. And somebody may traverse on the path of darkness. If one leaves the body in Krishna Paksha, in Dakshinayana, one will traverse the path of darkness. And this is for karmis, they may end up in heaven. Okay. And this is the path of return. Means there is rebirth. And that is the path of no return, that is liberation. But devotees are not so much bothered with these two paths described in 24, 25, 26 shlokas. Okay. The path of devotees, 27th shloka, Krishna says, although the devotees know these two paths, they are not bewildered. So they are always fixed in devotion. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu yoga yukto bhavarjuna. 27th shloka. Naite stri, naite shriti partha janan, partha janan. Yogi muhiyati kaschana. Tasmat sarveshu kaleshu yoga yukto bhavarjuna. This yoga is bhakti yoga. And this yogi is bhakti yogi. Krishna says, don't bother so much about these two ways of living body in Uttarayana, Dakshinayana. Then you may see, Bhishma is a pure devotee. Okay. He was waiting for Uttarayana to come. How is it justified? Why Bhishma has to leave his body in Uttarayana? If Uttarayana is disregarded by Krishna, directly in the shloka, not even purport, okay? So, now, to bewilder the outside people, okay, we may say, read the description as, okay, Bhishma left body in Uttarayana. But Uttarayana has different meaning. Uttara is Mother Uttara, Mother of Parikshit, okay? Ayana means one who is shelter of Mother Uttara. Uttarayana. So, Bhishma was waiting for Uttarayana to leave the body. That does not mean he is waiting for Uttarayana time. He is waiting for Krishna, who is Uttarayana, to come and see him. Right? He says that in his prayers also. He says that, let that Lord always wait for me while I leave this body. Okay? When Krishna came there, he could have immediately left the body, but Krishna gave him some service. Krishna wanted to glorify Bhishma. To give a counseling session to Yudhishthira is not a small thing. He is not an iOS boy. Right? So, Krishna failed to counsel Yudhishthir. Vyasadeva failed to counsel Yudhishthir. Dhaumya failed to counsel Yudhishthir. And Bhishma is able to counsel Yudhishthir. So, although Bhishma is misunderstood by some people for taking the side of the Kauravas and fighting against Krishna, Arjuna and Pandavas, Krishna wanted to glorify how knowledgeable and how devoted Bhishma was just before leaving his body. Right? Krishna always takes pleasure in glorifying his devotees. When I could not convince Yudhishthir, Bhishma could convince Yudhishthir. When every inch of Bhishma's body is pierced with arrows, and when he is lying on the bed of arrows, Bhishma had the culture of hospitality to receive guests with sweet words, and Bhishma had the knowledge and the presence of mind to speak Rajadharma, Dhanadharma, Stri Dharma, Ashrama Dharma, Varna Dharma, and ultimately Bhagavata Dharma to Yudhishthira Maharaj. So Krishna glorified Bhishma to such a degree. And Bhishma has been waiting for Uttarayana to come. Not the time Uttarayana, the person Uttarayana. Uttarayana is, Uttara is Uttara, Mother Uttara, Ayana is shelter. Two meanings again here. The two meanings are, Krishna who gave shelter to Uttara, or Krishna who has taken shelter of Uttara's womb. He entered the womb of Uttara, right, to protect Swarikshit. So he is waiting for Krishna to come. So devotional meanings are revealed to devotees, external meanings are revealed to outside people. Okay, so you take, everything is there for everyone. So, and even the shloka also says, this Bhishma attained some nirvana. Nirvana word is used, some mukti related word is used. Brahma nirvana, something like that is used. How can this happen? But Prabhupada immediately clarifies, Bhishma attained Parthasarthi planet in the spiritual world, where he is eternally participating in Kurukshetra war with Arjuna. Okay. So devotional imports are given by acharyas. Okay. So now final, 28th shloka, very beautiful and important shloka. Vedeshu yagneshu tapasu chaiva. Daneshu yat punya phala pradishtam atyeti tat sarva midam viditva yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam vedeshu by Vedic study, yagneshu by doing so many sacrifices, tapasu by doing so many austerities, chaiva daneshu by giving charity, yat punya phala pradishtam, whatever punya or pious credits that you acquire, you will acquire all that by bhakti, and you will acquire much more than that. Atyati tat sarva vidam viditva. All the results of all these activities are automatically available for a devotee, and much more is available. Atyati tat sarva vidam viditva. Yogi param sthanam upaiti chadyam. That's why a bhakti yogi has param sthanam. He is the topmost of all the group of yogis. Right? Param sthanam upaiti chadyam. A bhakti yogi can easily attain the abode of the Lord. So now this completes 8th chapter, the pending syllabus. And I will start my syllabus. 9th chapter. We'll complete tomorrow, 9th chapter. So in the previous chapter, Krishna mentioned that a pure devotee, solely fixed in performing ananya bhakti, surpasses the path of light and darkness. Okay. Now Krishna continues to describe, glorify bhakti yoga. Now we know 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita. First 6 karma yoga, predominantly, of course bhakti is everywhere, but predominantly karma yoga in the first 6 chapters, predominantly jnana yoga in the last 6 chapters, and the middle 6 chapters bhakti yoga. So this middle 6 chapters are confidential, and they are considered the essence of Bhagavad Gita. And in this middle 6, the middle 2, 9 and 10, are considered the essence of essence. And in this 9th chapter, 34th shloka, manmana bhavamad bhakto, that is the essence of the essence of the essence. Right. So now 9th chapter is considered very essential chapter, and in this 9th chapter Krishna reveals his heart. So far in the 7th and 8th chapters Krishna is speaking about bhakti yoga, but it's like a more formal description. Okay, but Krishna gets more intimate, more personal, and he reveals his heart. What is there in his heart? How does he deal with a devotee who offers very little amount of service? How does he deal with a devotee who does some mistakes sometimes? Apichet Sudaracharo. Okay. So how he is very liberal to a devotee, even if he is unable to come to ananya stays, at least yat karoshi yatashnasi yajjuhoshi dadasiyat. Right? If you cannot come to, anyways, we'll come there and we'll discuss. If you come to the level, if you cannot come to the level of 9.26, patram pushpam phalam toyam, at least do 9.27. If you cannot offer me what I want, at least offer what you have. Okay, so 9.27 is a little, we'll discuss that. So basically in the 9th chapter, Krishna reveals his heart very vividly. So guhya means confidential knowledge. So Krishna gave that confidential knowledge from chapter 2 to chapter 6, the knowledge of matter and spirit, soul and body. So that is confidential knowledge. Then there is guhyatara knowledge, more confidential knowledge, that Krishna gave in 7th and 8th chapters, the knowledge of his energies. And this is guhyatama knowledge. In the 9th chapter, Krishna is giving most confidential knowledge, where he reveals the knowledge of kevala bhakti or ananya bhakti. Okay. And there are nice parallels between 7th and 9th chapter. So we'll go through the first shloka. Idam tu te guhyatamam pravakshyam yanasuyave jnanam vijnana sahitam yajnatva mokshase shubhat. Idam tu te guhyatamam. Not guhya, not guhyatara, it is guhyatama. This is the most confidential knowledge. Pravakshyami, I am speaking this knowledge to you. Why? Why such most confidential knowledge is revealed by Krishna to Arjuna? Because he is anasuyave. There is no asuya. There is no irsya. There is no envy. So being non-envious is the qualification to hear Bhagavad Gita. Understand Bhagavad Gita. Anyone can hear. But the understanding of Bhagavad Gita depends on how non-envious are we. Same thing for Bhagavatam also. Dharma projita kaitavotra paramoha nirmatsaranam satam vedyam vastavamatra vastu shivadam tapatrayon mulanam. So nirmatsaranam satam vedyam. Bhagavatam is understandable by nirmatsara devotees, non-envious devotees. To the degree we are non-envious, to that degree we can understand Gita and Bhagavatam. Here anasuyave word is mentioned. So because you are never envious of me, now Arjuna became a student and Krishna is a teacher. If the student is envious of the teacher, what the student will learn? Right? If when we are hearing Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam from someone, if we have envy towards that other person who is speaking Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, we cannot learn from them. We cannot understand from them. Right? So why is he speaking like this? Why is he speaking at all? So now Arjuna never had envy towards Krishna. Krishna was playing the role of a friend or cousin of Arjuna. And later he took the role of chariot driver. Okay. Then Arjuna said, I accept you as my guru. Although you are doing so many menial services out of your love for us, I accept you as my guru. No envy. Arjuna did not immediately get into a super, I am warrior, you are just a driver. What will I listen from you? Okay. So Arjuna never saw Krishna, although he is receiving so many services from Krishna, assistance and favor from Krishna, Arjuna never considered himself superior to Krishna. He had that obedience and respect for Krishna, and he was never envious of Krishna. Right? So Arjuna is non-envious. Not envious, not selfish, not hostile, and doesn't see any faults in Krishna. Okay, so thus he can understand Krishna. Envious and selfish people cannot understand Krishna or the knowledge of devotional service. Okay, Acharya say that. So because you are non-envious, I am revealing this knowledge to you. Jnanam vijnana sahitam yad jnatva mokshase ashubhat. So I will reveal to you knowledge, jnanam, knowledge of pure bhakti. And vijnanam means the culmination of that jnanam, which is realization. I will bestow upon you knowledge and realization of that knowledge also. Okay. So hearing about Krishna, chanting his glories, this is all knowledge about Krishna. Yad jnatva mokshase ashubhat. If you know this, then there is no ashubha. Then there is no inauspiciousness. Second shloka. Raja vidya raja guhyam. Pavitramidamuttamam pratyakshavagamam dharmyam susukham kartum avyayam. So in this shloka, Krishna describes 8 characteristics of the knowledge of pure bhakti. One is Raja Vidya. This is the king of all knowledge. Next, Raja Guhyam. it is the king of all secrets, most confidential knowledge. Pavitram, it's extremely pure, no material contamination. Idam uttamam, uttamam, it is beyond the darkness of this material world. Rajavidya, Rajaguhyam, Pavitram, Idam Uttamam, Pratyaksha Avagamam. So one will be able to get direct experience of the self, the true nature of the self and the true nature of Krishna by taking shelter of the knowledge of Bhakti Yoga. Pratyaksha Avagamam. Dharmyam, it is the perfection of Dharma, religion. What is the perfection of Dharma? Service to Krishna. So taking to Bhakti Yoga is the real occupational duty of all living beings. As revealed in Bhagavatam also. Savai pamsam paro dharmo yato bhakti radhokshaje. So, in the spiritual world, we don't find karmis, jnanis or yogis. We only find bhaktas. We don't find in the spiritual world paramatma meditators or those who are aspiring to merge into impersonal Brahman of the Lord. Right? So, of course, these different paths are made available to the humanity so that they can connect with the Lord according to their capacity, according to their current position. But ultimately, Bhakti Yoga, performing Bhakti, is the eternal constitutional position of all living beings. Dharmyam. That's the perfect eternal occupation of all living beings. Then, susukham kartum. And it is very joyfully performed, very happily performed. Avyayam. It is inexhaustible. It is everlasting. It is eternal. It is beyond modes. Anything within the modes is destructible, is vyayam. Anything beyond modes is avyayam. Whatever little practice of devotional service that we do, bhakti that we do, it is not lost. The credits of the devotional service are there in the eternal bank account. Somebody may say, okay, even if I do some material activities, it's not lost. I will carry the propensities to the next life. Okay, I will have those impressions. But that is also material. Right, you may have material habits and material thoughts and material actions in this life. You may carry those propensities to the next life. It's all material, within the material realm. It's within the modes. Right? One may carry the past life impressions, material impressions to the next life also. Okay, but that's on a material plane. But one will carry the experiences or realizations or the credits of devotional service, and they are spiritual in nature, and one will get an opportunity to continue that and then improve from there and reunite with Krishna. Right? Avyayam. Next, third shloka. Ashraddhana Purusha Dharmasya Asya Parantapa Aprapya Mamni Vartante Mrityu Samsara Vartmani. Who cannot attain Krishna is mentioned here. So, Ashraddha Dhana Purusha, one who does not have Shraddha, one who does not have faith in Krishna or Bhakti. Dharmasya Asya Parantapa, here Dharma is Bhakti Yoga. Paro Dharma, Bhakti Yoga. Ashraddha Dhana Purusha Dharmasya Asya. The highest meaning of these words is that one who is not faithful in this path of Bhakti Yoga, one who does not have faith in the process of devotional service, such people aprapyamam, they cannot attain me. Right? If we doubt the potency of bhakti, if we have hundreds of reservations in performing bhakti or questions or doubts about the result of bhakti, one cannot attain Krishna. Mrityu samsara vartmani, and they remain in the path of mrityu samsara. Okay? Vartmani, they keep wandering in this. So what is Shraddha? Prabhupada defines Shraddha in the purport. So, Ashraddha people cannot attain Krishna. Okay. But what is Shraddha? There are hundreds of ways in which Shraddha could be defined. Real faith could be defined. But Prabhupada gives a simple definition. Real faith is complete conviction that simply by serving Krishna, one can attain all perfection. So, conviction on the potency of bhakti, conviction on the personality of Krishna. Okay. And by doing so, by having that, one will attain perfection. That conviction is faith. Right? Such faith is created in the association of devotees. If you take advantage of the association of exalted devotees, then one can develop that real faith and conviction and trust in Krishna's intentions. Faith in Krishna's exalted nature. So with this we'll conclude. Fourth shloka onwards we'll continue tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.